This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Sam Lau here with our famous stand-in, Eric Dahl, as Jeff Mayberry is playing hooky today. So we've got Mr. Dahl here to help us along through this episode of Monday Morning Minutes. So welcome, Eric.
Hey, hey, hey.
There we go. And we're recording today on Friday, September 16th. We are doing this earlier in the day. I see it's just after 8 a.m. on Friday here. We do have a little bit of a hectic schedule today, so we figured we'd knock this one out early in preparation of FOMC week next week. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and kick us off into where we are in terms of the markets for the week of ending September 16th here. So looking across the board and looking at some of the things that I'm seeing today, I'm seeing a whole lot of red today, but what that meant for the week to date so far on this early day on Friday is the S&P 500 is down over 5 percentage points on a week to date basis, clinging on to a quarter to date of just over 2 percentage points positive for the quarter to date performance. It's down, getting closer to that down 20% again, Eric. It's down 18% on a year-to-date basis right now. So across the board on a year-to-date basis, we still only have energy and utilities that are printing in the green. The rest is in red by a pretty big shot, too. It looks like the best chance of getting positive as in terms of a third sector based on just the actual year-to-date return, not based on how we're viewing that sector, but it's closest to zero here. It's at a negative 7% is consumer staples. So that's a pretty big gap. It still needs to make its way through there, but we still have just over 3 months here left in the year. In terms of where we stood within the sectors across underlying the S&P 500, all 11 sectors were in the red this week. Best performer was healthcare, down about 2.5%. Worst performers at this moment is a tie to the basis point between technology and real estate, each of those down 7.05%. There is no shelter within the other indices that we look at as well for U.S. equities. The Russell 1000 large caps are down about 5 percentage points week to date so far, as are the small caps represented by the Russell 2000. Russell 1000 growth is down about 6%, and then Russell 1000 value is down just over 4% on a week to date basis. Moving over to fixed income land, a big move higher, especially at the shorter end of the curve in yields across the treasury curve. I had to look at it twice here. It looks like the two-year treasury note is currently at 3.9%. That's up 34 basis points over last Friday, and that is up 3 basis points over yesterday. So continuing to see some impact here based on some of the economic data prints that we saw, and largely just repricing off of the recent inflation print. But I'll leave that to Mr. Dahl to speak about and talk about some of the things that he saw in that part of the economy. And then moving over to the 10-year treasury note, that is currently at a yield of 3.31, up 13 basis points over last Friday, pretty much flat over yesterday though. And then the bond, the 30-year bond is at 3.5% yield, up 5 basis points over the week. So we did have a further curve flattening or inversion, depending on how you're looking at it, across the various spreads that we're looking at here. So with that, the 10-year yield less the 2-year yield is now inverted by 46 basis points. That dropped, that went lower by 20 basis points there just on the week. So pretty big moves, pretty big reset across the, especially with the shorter end of the curve based on some of these triggers that, Mr. Jay Powell will be looking at and talking about next week there. What that meant for the bond market is the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate is down almost a percentage point on the week-to-date alone, bringing that year-to-date number further negative, where I see it down over 12% now on the year-to-date basis. Again, nowhere to hide in fixed income, with the best performer there with U.S. Treasuries down 70 basis points. The worst performer was high yield U.S. high yield corporate credit down about 2.9%. Everything in between, obviously red there, but just across the board, just to rattle some off here, agency mortgage-backed securities and bank loans, as well as IG corporate credit, all down about a percent on the week. And then EM down just over 2% on the emerging market debt there. Moving over to commodities, no love there either. Down about a percentage point, let's just call it, on the BCOM on a week-to-date basis. Year-to-date, it dropped below the 20 handle. It's now down, I see it, it's up, rather. In the sea of red, I see this one green print that I'm going to bring out. It's up 19.5% on a year-to-date basis, and that is the Bloomberg Commodity Index there. Looking at oil was down as based on the WTI front month spot future. It's about flat for oil, and it's flat for definitely this week. I mean, if we look at it compared to everything else, that's down 50 basis points. It's still maintaining this $86 handle that it had last week, but well below that $90 per barrel that we've just been seeing a few months back. So a little bit of weakness there, but it seems to have found some footing there right around the mid-80s or so in WTI crude oil. That's still up about 15% on the year-to-date basis. Gold didn't see any love. Again, it's down below 1,700 bucks a troy ounce. I see it at 1,676 now. So before it couldn't fight to get above 18, now it's got to fight to stay above 1,600 a troy ounce. And then finally, to wrap it all up, Bitcoin, no love there. Down below 20,000 again. It's down 8% on the week, down over almost 60% on a year-to-date basis. So with that, Dahl, do you want to give our listeners a sense of what might have driven some of these market moves and what happened in the week of macro?
Absolutely. I think, you know, before we jump into that, it's interesting to kind of look at gold. I mean, at these levels, it's the cheapest it's been in some time. And I think it is tied into the fact that the interest rate situation has changed. The real yields are attractive. So the gold bugs of the world, well, maybe they'd rather have some coupon in their pocket rather than just the pet rock to look at.
Yeah, and these worlds of rising positive real yields, right? So it's, I mean, it brings us back to, what is it, the Buffett quote? You can fondle it, but it won't fondle you back.
That's right. You know, it's shiny, and, you know, people have valued gold for millennia, but it doesn't actually do anything productive. So
unless you're talking about it as I guess you don't call it an industrial metal, but when you talk about it used in industrial purposes, I suppose.
Yeah, no, that's true. It does have good electronic properties, thermal properties. So there are kind of utilitarian uses for it.
Mark Kimbrell's ears just perked up. the most positive statement you've ever made on gold, Mr. Dahl.
So jumping into the macro, I mean, it was all about Tuesday. I think a lot of the numbers you were discussing came from the Tuesday CPI print, which was the real kind of market moving, market shattering print. You know, we had the year over year headline CPI come in at 8.3%, which was 0.2% over expectations. But more concerning was the fact that the core CPI came in at 6.3%, which excludes food and energy, which are considered the most volatile aspects of CPI. So that core CPI came in at 6.3%, which was 0.2% above expectations. And that was concerning to the markets because, you know, the markets have been trying to guess where interest rates are going to go, because all financial assets, whether it's gold or stocks or bonds, are going to be priced off of the lowest risk investment out there, which is U.S. treasuries. And that, you know, academics call that the risk-free rate. But, you know, as we, Mark, you and I, Lau, know that, like, there's no such thing as no risk, but that's the lowest risk thing out there. And that really precipitated a massive drop in yield, in increase in yields, and a massive drop in stocks, these high CPI print. You know, you have the S&P down over 4% on Tuesday. You have the Dow down about 4%. You have the NASDAQ down over 5%. So I think those CPI numbers really shocked the market into maybe a new reality. If you look at market expectations of rate hikes now, to jump ahead a little, next week, one of the big important things that's going to happen is the FOMC meeting that's happening on Wednesday. And that rate decision right now is priced in at 0.75% to 1%. I mean, it probably won't be 1%, but it might come in at 1%, which is a pretty big shock. So I think really, like, 30,000 foot view, the most important thing that happened this week was that CPI print. And digging into the numbers, I mean, it wasn't that great, because when you ignore the noisy food and energy contributions, the scariest thing in that CPI number was medical care services and shelter. And from my point of view, at least, from a lot of the data we look at, it seems like the shelter component of CPI could continue to be higher than expectations. And, you know, the housing market has started to slow down, but that takes time for interest rates to work through the whole system and for the housing and market, both purchasing and rental market, to slow down. So from that point of view, it seems like the Fed is going to be put in a scenario where, in order to get inflation under control, they're going to have to continue to raise interest rates considerably, which is going to hurt risk assets and hurt bonds short term, but longer term make fixed income more attractive. I mean, do you have a perspective there, Mr. Lau?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that just really shocked beyond just the move that exceeded expectations is just how broad based it was as well. I mean, you started to see, as you pointed out, Mr. Dahl, was just the move that was there in terms of the the shelter component, right? Each one, both OER, owner's equivalent rent, as well as just the actual rents, they're both up 70 basis points on a month over month basis. And we've seen that just continue to, well, it's accelerated over the last, you know, few prints as well. But that's something that we've been talking about for at least a year now here on Monday Morning Minutes, about how this is the part of the inflation basket that people have to watch, because while we're coming out of the depths of the pandemic, people were, you know, perhaps buying more goods, you know, buying more cars, used, and with supply disruptions, used cars got a strong bid, you know, during that period of time. But those, you know, we could see that could wane, and those were less sticky. But with the shelter component, that definitely is a stickier component of the CPI basket that underlies everyone's cost of living index, you know, basket there, right? And that's typically a big portion. If we all think about our income and where we spend it, shelter for the most part accounts for a large part. And that's why it's about a third of the overall headline basket. And for core, once you strip out energy and food, that accounts for, I believe, right around 40% or so of of everyone's, or at least of, sorry, not everyone's, of the BLS CPI basket on the core basis there. So that continues to trend up. Something else that moved up, which everyone unfortunately has to pay for as well, is just the cost of healthcare, right? Healthcare too also had a pretty big move on. In fact, on health insurance, it surged. I saw a note from our analyst Fahey on the macro team. He said that it surged almost 25% year over year on health insurance, and that's a record jump that we had. So these are things that everyone feels, especially those people in retirement as well. You know, the health insurance portion as you get older definitely continues to rise. So with that, I do see that there was some areas of weakness that came in the energy side. So in the headline component part, energy commodities did see a drop, but that was widely telegraphed just based on the moves that we've been talking about here, let's just say through the commodity portion of the market section. That blip may be short-lived, though. I mean, when you take a look at it, as we mentioned here earlier, that it looks like WTI crude oil might have found a home where it's starting to balance out the effects of supply and demand there. So we'll see if this continues to help bring down CPI, the energy component. But if it doesn't, you know, if it starts to stabilize there and it no longer contributes like it did this last print, negative 10% month over month, then you know, that will be supportive of upward pressure on CPI then. So that's definitely something, you know, it's kind of a long-winded rant as I'm looking at the BLS.gov page here for these numbers. But that's something that caught, you know, Powell and the rest of the FOMC's eyes. And that what that translates to the voting members has yet to be remain to be seen because we are in the quiet period. But I guess all we can say is, you know, it's been kind of quiet so far since the Tuesday print. It was quiet after the PPI print, but just watch out for Timmerl's, you know, see the WSJ reporter, see if he comes out as the mouthpiece for the Fed over the weekend or especially leading into next Wednesday's meeting.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, they may be using their mole in the media to try and telegraph something. I don't know. Maybe that's where these ideas of a 1% move are coming from, but we'll have to wait and see. Kind of moving on Wednesday, we had the producer price index come out, and that level came out at 8.7% year over year headline, and 7.3% year over year core, which is ex food and energy. So that 7.3 core was actually 0.3% over the expectation. So I think my point of view is the PPI numbers, yeah, while they're declining a little bit, they kind of confirm the negative shock that CPI showed on Wednesday or on Tuesday, pardon. And you have to really think, okay, producers are feeling the pain, that they're still going to be passing on some of that cost to consumers. And you can kind of hear the anecdotes. I mean, you mentioned the 25% increase in medical care. That's pretty incredible year over year. That's a huge expense for people. And that's an expense you can't really easily defer either. That really hits you in the pocket and in your heart, your body, you know, when you get something like that. So I don't really take a lot of solace from the PPI numbers coming down, because the core level was above expectations. So that's kind of my point of view there.
Yeah, and then also, I mean, you see it on the month over month print there, that it also increased as well. But perhaps, you know, there's a little bit of solace, if you will, with the negative 0.1% on the final demand. But within the core, we did see that positive 0.4 on the month over month basis. So we'll see. We'll continue to watch that. As you said, it does lead in, or we do see it as leading into the prices that the consumers eventually pay.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's always good to stay balanced, you know, especially when you're in markets like these where it seems like they're kind of moving in one direction. The employment market, the labor market, is the one really bright star in the U.S. economy right now. On Thursday, the initial jobless claims came in for the week ending September 10th at 213,000, which was below the estimate by 14,000 and at a very low level historically. And so you also, that leads the initial jobless claims into a downtrend if you're looking at the moving average of initial claims. So I think that that's just interpreting that is the labor market continues to be very robust, even in the face of high inflation and high rate hikes. So I think that that really just gives more, it gives more strength to the Federal Reserve's thought process. Like within the Federal Reserve, within the FOMC, they're going to be looking at the labor market and looking at the inflation market. That's their dual mandate, maximum employment and price stability. Well, they have maximum employment and they have wildly unstable prices. So for them, I think they're in a scenario where they're really just having to try and wrangle unstable prices at all costs, because the labor side of their dual mandate is just solid as a rock. And that makes me kind of see, it gives me more confidence, or at least I can see the increased probabilities of a shocking 1% hike or a 0.75% hike on Wednesday. That's
based on the background of the strong labor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It just depends on, we'll see. I mean, we could just be a little patient here and see what happens on Wednesday, but hopefully Paul doesn't come out on the shock and awe campaign.
Yeah, hopefully not. But we'll see, because I think it takes time for these interest rate hikes to work their way through the economy. Here at Double Line, I mean, we've had our CIO say maybe the Fed should just press pause for a while and let these rates kind of mature through the entire economy. But it doesn't seem like the current inflation backdrop and narrative that's on the FOMC's kind of collective mind is going to allow for that. So they're going to hike on Wednesday, and we're going to see if it's going to be a 75 or 1%. It would be a shock if it was 0.5%.
Mr. Dahl's being a little bit mysterious there, but the CIO, his name is a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Gundlach. And Mr. Dahl's talking about, in reference to something that Mr. Gundlach had just talked about in the webcast that he hosted yesterday for our listeners out there. But he was talking about in reference of of Jay Powell, and perhaps maybe it's time for him to have some water, you know, have a glass of water instead of just chugging away in terms of these rate hikes. But it's well worth a listen when we actually put it out onto onto the YouTube channel that we have there. So check it out for those of you who are interested when it comes out. Well, we'll let you know here on Monday Morning Minutes when it drops.
Yeah. And so rounding things out, you know, on Thursday, we had the retail sales come out, and the retail sales were pretty positive versus estimates, where the retail sales month over month in August were going to decline 0.1%. And the actual print was positive 0.3%. So that was a pretty big swing. And in absolute terms, that nets out to a decline relative to 2 months ago. But all that said, I think the consumer is still pretty strong. The labor market is still pretty strong, and in spite of all the headwinds we see. So that's kind of my point of view there. And it just kind of gives credence to the fact that it's going to take some serious rate hikes to really put the brakes on the U.S. economy right now, or at least it's going to take some time for the rate hikes that have already happened to flow through the system. And then today we have the University of Michigan sentiment indicator come out at 59.5, which was below expectations, but above the prior of 58.2. I think sentiment it's a pretty ephemeral thing. So I don't read too much into like one print of sentiment. I think looking at the trend there shows that sentiment is okay right now. That's kind of my point of view. Inflation is really on people's minds, but the labor market is strong. So that kind of, it's a weird scenario we're in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you captured it. I mean, sentiment, especially investor sentiment, is very fleeting, right? I mean, it's just, which way is has the stock market been in the last, you know, pick your window, last minute, last hour, last tick, you know, last week, right? So and that's, so goes investor sentiment, right? So with that though, I think one of the big things that we're looking out for too, in terms of the University of Michigan survey, was just their outlooks in terms of inflation on that. I believe it's the 1 year outlook as well as the next 5 to 10 years. And both of those came down from those elevated levels that initially spooked Jay Powell. So maybe hopefully that gives him a little bit of comfort and tempers his positioning and thinking about you know, how much he has to do and he and the rest of the FOMC has to do next week.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mr. Lau. I think if he thinks longer term inflation expectations are coming down, maybe he will exercise more caution and measure and only increase rates by 50 basis points or 75. The market isn't saying that right now, but you know, it's anybody's guess. So that brings us to next week. And next week, the all-important data watch is Wednesday. Watch that FOMC rate decision. I think that's going to be very important. As we've discussed already a lot, the expectation in the market is 75 to 1% increase in the federal funds rate, but we'll have to wait and see. On Thursday, we get the leading economic indicators, which is estimated to be at zero. Like the prior was negative, so zero would be you know, better than negative, but I think that's another thing to watch with, you know, the current scenario and in such a state of uncertainty economically. You could see that being a market moving event as well. We have jobless claims come out Thursday the 22nd as well. And then wrapping up next week, Friday, you have the S&P Global U.S. Manufacturing and S&P Global U.S. Services number come out. I think those are important, but really the thing to watch next week is the Fed. And that's wraps up the macro radar for the week ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I'll add to that, Eric, I just pulled up the eco calendar here and just see what who's making the rounds next week and, you know, shortly thereafter from the FOMC. But it looks like Powell is giving the opening remarks at their periodic Fed Listens event. So it'll be interesting to see what he says there. And that's on Friday of next week. And then after that, it doesn't seem like people are scheduled to come out and speak until the week after the FOMC day. So we'll watch to see what Powell says, but I highly doubt it's going to be anything different from what he just said 2 days ago. Otherwise, something big happened in the economy there. So hopefully it's unched versus his message on the prior Wednesday there. But with that, that pretty much wraps this week up. Eric, thanks for standing in for Mr. Mayberry, who's absent. And then wanted to thank everyone for tuning in. And just a reminder, since it is FOMC day next week, that's what our focus will be on Monday Morning Minutes. So be sure to tune in and listen to our wrap-up when Mr. Mayberry returns.
Yeah, thanks to all of our listeners out there today. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can always check out the latest episode on Monday before the bell so you can get ready for the week ahead. Monday Morning Minutes is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Send us something on Twitter at DL Minutes so we can get some questions and hopefully answer those. Or you can send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com.
Yeah, and you can find out more information about DoubleLine at our website, doubleline.com. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/DoubleLineCapital, where if you subscribe, you can get that notification that Gunlock's webcast dropped. It should be coming out in the next few days or week or so. And then you can also follow me and Jeff Sherman on Twitter for our other podcast, the Sherman Show podcast. And that Twitter username is Sherman Show Pod. So hope everyone has a great week and good luck out there.
Please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Copyright 2022, DoubleLine Capital.